Chuck Greenhill, sitting next to me, is the owner of that airplane, the Duck, and Allison Anders is the daughter of Greg. So that's where we'll start today. Greg, start us off. Cadet, what is this airplane, and how did it come to still be alive out here?
Well, the airplane itself is it was designed as a trainer, started in 1941, so this is the 75th anniversary of the Interstate Cadet, and that's part of the whole Air Venture experience this year, is to honor the Interstate Cadet. We got several of them here, had 18 at one point here, so that was pretty neat to see that many of these little airplanes left over. It was designed as a sort of high-end trainer at the time, so it was sort of the more expensive of the trainers, and but it was a very wonderful wing, great design, great little airplane for learning to fly.
How much more advanced was it than the trainers that it was trying to replace?
Well, to say advanced, you'd have to really just look at the wing, because I mean, this one has no electrical system. The early ones had no electrical systems in them, so it's a very basic airframe, but the wing is just a wonderful wing. So I mean, to me, it was the engineering and the concept of the wing and that type of airframe to get a good training environment for a great little wing. It's not as stole as some of the other small airplanes, but it's a beautiful flying wing. I literally compare that wing to flying a Spitfire wing.
So where was this airplane on December 7th, 1941?
So this airplane was part of the Ole Andrew had a flight in FBO out on Hawaii, and so it was on John Rogers Airfield, which is now Honolulu International. John Rogers, as a name, moved over to Barbers Point. But it was Honolulu International. It's Honolulu International today. So it was sitting on the runway there at John Rogers Airfield. It's December 7th.
And tell us about Cornelia Fort.
So Cornelia Fort, she is just an absolutely fascinating lady. The more I've learned about her, the more I just wish I could have met that woman back in her day. She was a Nashville debutante. And she was pretty. She was tall, and she was really smart. Now, those three characterizations, two of them are bad things for Nashville debutantes. So she didn't really fit into that environment. And she went out one day with a girlfriend of hers who was dating an instructor pilot and got a flight in an airplane at 10 o'clock in the morning. And she hung out all day at the airport till he was finished with all his other lessons so she could get her first lesson that day. She was bit by the bug hard as soon as she experienced it. She loved it. 2 years later, she had her instructor license and just the whole work. She was really quick at getting all the training done.
Was that in Nashville or in Honolulu?
She did most of her initial training in Nashville.
Right.
And so she got a job in Denver for a little while, and then she got... But in 1941, the interesting thing was, you know, she suffered the societal handicaps of perspective at the time. So in society at that time, it was basically considered that women couldn't fly. So she had a really hard time getting a job as an instructor teaching people how to fly airplanes. So she ended up getting a job in Hawaii, and that really fit in with what she wanted to do, because she was a person that understood that there was a war coming, and the war was here for the world, and she knew that the United States would eventually be in it, whether we liked it or not. She really believed that in her heart. So she went to Hawaii primarily because she got the job, but secondarily, she knew that she could teach the defense industry guys that were then probably going to be the pilots and aviators in the war.
Wow. So the attack was at 7:48, the first bombs dropped.
That's right.
So where was she at that point? What was she doing?
So she was teaching a student who's a little bit lost to history. All we know is his name is So'umala. And she was airborne, giving him his pre-solo ride. Could you imagine if he had been cleared to solo and hear the Japanese Soho up? But so they were in the pattern, right over John Rogers Airfield, and she's in the back seat teaching. You know, and I'm sure that the student was looking down at John Rogers Airfield. He was getting ready to turn a base to do a landing, trying to impress his instructor, focused on all the right stuff. There's no radio, so he didn't have to cloud his head with a radio conversation. And Cornelia looks off to the side and sees this military plane coming right at her. Her first reaction is, those darn Army Air Corps guys are in the wrong airspace. Pulls the airplane up, almost gets hit. And as the plane goes underneath her, she looks down and there's this red rising sun on the wing. And she goes, that's not Army Air Corps. Looks up to the harbor and starts seeing the first bombs go off. So she knew that they were under attack by the Japanese, and so she takes the airplane, turns a quick base to final. She hears something go behind them, an airplane, with the machine guns going, but all she's doing is trying to get on the runway. She lands the aircraft. They both get out as quick as they can, and they start running across the tarmac. A Zero come by and strafes them as they're running, and they miss them, fortunately. She runs into the FBO and sells to everybody, "Hey, we're under attack by the Japanese." And everybody kind of looks at her and goes, "Cornelia, you're funny." And about 30 seconds later, one of the mechanics runs in and goes, "Hey, we're under attack by the Japanese, and Bob Tice just got killed on the tarmac." He had landed his airplane and did the same thing Cornelia was doing. He was running for the FBO for cover, got strafed, but he got hit and killed. So he was the first recorded casualty of Pearl Harbor.
So what did Cornelia do then? Did she stay in Honolulu, or she come back to the mainland, or what?
Well, they took cover for the day in the hangar, and then the attack was over. You got to remember, the mindset at the time was the Japanese are invading. The part of the surprise of Pearl Harbor was that it was an air attack. They were really expecting an invasion. So everybody was very nervous. She tried to get off the island, but everybody was getting off the island, so she couldn't get a ticket. It took her like 6 weeks to get off the island. She wrote her will because she was sure that her boat was going to get sunk on the way to California. You got to remember, people were thinking the Japanese were invading. And so she managed to get home, got back to Nashville, and eventually got reunited with her family in Nashville, Tennessee.
And became a WASP.
She was the first of the waifs to sign. She was basically the second waif to sign up. So she was trying to get involved with the military flying, and so she had her ear to the rail. And as soon as she heard, she went out there and got signed up.
You know, and by the way, Saturday at 1 o'clock, we're celebrating WASPs, the female aviators of World War II, all week. And Saturday at 1 o'clock here, we'll be talking with a former WASP and other incredible female aviators of today, including Connie Bolin, who happens to be one of those. So if you're interested in the WASP background and history, come join us at 1 o'clock on Saturday. You know, thinking about the generations of female aviators, Greg, now here's your daughter, right?
That's right.
Allison, and she's the third generation. By the way, this makes the third generation in this family, because what you may not know is that her grandfather, Greg's dad, is Bill Anders from Apollo 8. He took that picture of Earthrise. Jim Lovell will tell you he took it, but he didn't. Bill Anders took that picture. But anyway, so here is three generations. And Allison, where are you now in the process of learning to fly?
Well, I'm...
Yeah, go ahead. He'll turn it up.
Start talking.
Well, I'm working towards getting my private pilot's license. I soloed last summer, and I'm trying to take lessons at the same time as school. And so taking it slowly, but hopefully going to get it done soon.
How much pressure is there within the family, Allison? Own up here.
There is a lot of pressure, but I don't really feel it. My family's pretty supportive of me becoming a pilot, so.
I'll bet they are. That's just great.
So she soloed in her 172, but she is fully capable of landing a Beaver on wheels, so we're getting her into the tail dragger world.
She's getting there already. Allison, that's cool. That's just great. And you're how old?
I'm going to be 20 in August.
Reaching 20 years of age.
That's 20 awesome. Years of age. And David, one of the main reasons I wanted to bring her up here today is to remind everybody, this is how old the waifs were and the WASPs when they were first signing up. So, I mean, what we consider to be this young girl is really these women that were walking out, hoping to walk out to B-17s and P-51s and start moving around the country in an effort to support the country in the war effort.
Yeah, exactly. Chuck, we'll come back to the cadet in a minute. Chuck, and here you are. We haven't bored you. You're still awake? Microphone.
Doing fine, yes.
What is a duck?
Well, it was what was a modern-day airplane in 1939. And anyway, it was the best of the best. There was the search and rescue for the Army and Navy, and they had them all around the country This particular one was in Hawaii in 1939. So anyway, it was in Pearl Harbor the day of the bombing, probably one of the only airplanes today that have that distinction of being in Pearl Harbor the day of the bombing and still flying in the United States.
Here. And where was it that it was able to survive the attack, which was so incredibly relentless for 2 hours?
Well, it was on the airfield. It was in the military airfield, and it got damaged in the attack. And anyway, it was rebuilt, and after the war, it didn't do anything in the war, but after the war, it became a civilian airplane, and that's where we kind of got into it.
If it's search and rescue, how would they rescue people? Understand about the search part, but what about the rescue part?
Yeah, they were landing these things in the middle of the ocean in an open sea. It just seems incredible to me because a couple of feet of water seems like a lot of water when I land it. But they were landing in these six-foot swells, and there's two little side windows. And if you look at the black line, that's the water line on the airplane. So you can see that a life raft would be right at those windows.
That black line was the water line?
Yeah, it's the water line that she sits in the water at, yes, at an idle. And anyway, they'd get the life rafts to come right up alongside, and there's a couple of seats in the airplane, but I know for a fact they've had as many as six people in that underneath, right, as well as a pilot and co-pilot, and took off in an open ocean situation with it.